I'm Rosalind Blakesley and I'm a reader in Russian and European art at the University of Cambridge. I've worked on Russian painting for a good couple of decades and for many years have thought, A, it would be wonderful to show the portraits of the later 19th and early 20th century because of their richness. But also there is this extraordinary coincidence of the State Tretyakov Gallery, Russia's most important collection of Russian painting, and the National Gallery in London being founded in the same year. So this seemed too good an opportunity to miss, really. So I thought we could bring the institutions together in this new partnership and demonstrate the riches of each collection to different audiences. We decided to focus on the half century leading up to the First World War for various reasons. The first is the astonishing riches that took place in literature, theatre, music and the arts in that period. The second is that there's particular dialogues between the people involved. They were so closely connected and they argued and they debated and they made friends and they fell out. And it just seemed a fabulous period to explore how the arts interconnect. So as an example, to have somebody like Rapin, the greatest Russian realist of the 19th century, painting Mussorgsky, one of the most extraordinary composers, and what that encounter means, because it's about so much more than person A painting person B, it's about how they interacted. The final reason is that we emphatically did not want to go into the avant-garde. It's been very well represented in exhibitions abroad. It's wonderful, nothing against it, but what I find important is to attract more attention to the extraordinary achievements in Russian painting of earlier periods. So actually, ideally, I'd want to be going further back in time rather further forward in time. So we deliberately did not go for the more stylized and increasingly abstract portraits. We wanted people to think about figurative painting in Russia and come to appreciate artists like Rapin and Serov. They're world class, but they're relatively little known outside Russia. So we've included a concentration of works by them to hopefully expand people's horizons a bit. We've chosen to hang the portraits in this exhibition relatively low, and certainly low compared to with how they're hung in the Tretyakov in Moscow, where they tend to be hung much higher. And what we wanted to do was give people a very different experience. So for a start, we've obviously got juxtapositions and comparisons that don't happen when they're in their permanent home. And we also give viewers the opportunity to get really close to what they're looking at and to study the paintwork, to study the application of colour, the way in which the picture's been constructed. So our Russian visitors so far have been delighted at that.
The period that this exhibition covers is one of incredible turmoil in Russia. Do you think that is the reason for the characters that are hung in this gallery? Do you think that is what has formed these very stubborn, very steadfast people?
That's a good question. Without question, with some of the writers, they felt this compulsion to respond to aspects of political or social debate with which they agreed or didn't agree. So in the first room where we have portraits of people like Alexander Herzen, he undoubtedly was formed by his enormous sort of antipathy to aspects of the status quo in Russia. He was so outspoken that he went into exile and in fact lived in London from 1852 for many years. He was very cultured, very widely read, passionate about portraiture, and so we strongly suspect he would have visited the National Portrait Gallery when he was living in London because it opened while he was here. So it's rather lovely to welcome him back in different guise, 160 years later.
The portrait of Mussorgsky the composer with his red nose and his defiant blue eyes, that was painted just before he died, I understand.
Yes, it was. Mussorgsky was an astonishing young talent. He was this mercurial talent, an extremely extremely sort of powerful figure. And sadly, his talent was accompanied by chronic drinking problems. And in 1881, he was hospitalized for various health problems, all of which were related to his alcoholism. He was only in his early 40s, so very tragic story. The patron Tretyakov, whose collection lies at the heart of the State Tretyakov Gallery, one of Russia's greatest ever patrons, he determined to commission a portrait of Mussorgsky and asked Rapin, the great realist, to travel straight away to St. Petersburg. So Rapin caught the overnight train. He painted Mussorgsky over the course of 3 days in hospital. So Mussorgsky is actually in his hospital dressing gown, but with beautiful flashes of an embroidered shirt underneath. Very sadly, just 10 days after Rapin finished the portrait, Mussorgsky died. He had for a while been sober, but he started drinking on his name day, which is a big celebration in Russia, and his health deteriorated rapidly. So it is a portrait painted in the final fortnight of the composer's life. to my mind, it's one of the greatest portraits ever produced. I mean, A, it's a spectacular work of art, but it has such a charged encounter behind it. It's a very moving piece. The portrait of Dostoevsky is the only one of him ever painted from life, so it's a real act of generosity for the Russian Tretyakov Gallery to lend it, because it is a unique portrait and it's very loved in Russia. It's a very calm, composed portrait. It doesn't sensationalize what's happened to Dostoevsky in the past when he was sentenced to 10 years in Siberia. But what you do see, the more you look at it, you realize there is actually a tension to it. He's a very taut figure. He doesn't look at the viewer. He looks into the distance, and his fingers are sort of tightly gripped. His shoulders are slightly raised. So it's a superb piece of painting, which captures in a very understated way some of the sort of fraughtness of Dostoevsky's condition. We finished the exhibition with a portrait of Anna Akhmatova, who's a superlative poet of the 20th century. She began in the early 20th century writing symbolist poetry, but she moved to encompass all sorts of other directions as well, and indeed to spearhead them. She had a very troubled, very tragic life. She married first a man called Nikolai Gumilev, himself a critic and poet, whose portrait we also include. That marriage didn't last. They divorced in 1918, but nonetheless, when Gumilev was executed in 1921 for counter-revolutionary activities, allegedly, Akhmatova was distraught. They had remained very close. She was relentlessly persecuted under the Bolshevik and Stalinist regimes. She wasn't able to publish her poetry. She was under constant surveillance. She was followed in the street. And most horrifically, her son was repeatedly incarcerated for very long periods, for years at a time, simply for the crime of being Akhmatova's son. So they got at the poet by imprisoning the son. He was eventually released for good in the 1950s, and she was rehabilitated in the period known as the thaw. But throughout that, for all this persecution, she never stopped writing. So she had astonishing drive and commitment and moral courage. And amongst her most celebrated works is a cycle known as Requiem, which is this kind of cry of lament for all of the victims of Stalin's regime. To write that at the time was just so perilous. So she's admired in Russia to a level it's very hard to convey in the West. She's admired both for the beauty of her poetry, but also just for her steadfastness, that she carried on writing and she carried on speaking about the atrocities when so many other people couldn't.